Reading from FEMA TMS website, the young journalist gets interrupted by a colleague who hands her an official federal tome, a highlighted copy of a 135-page guidebook developed by the Executive Office of the President titled AO Planning Guidance for Response to a Nuclear Detonation. A journalist, FEMA and the Office of the President say this is what people should expect from a 10-kiloton nuclear detonation in their city or town. She has no way of knowing the bomb that just struck Washington, D.C., was 1 megaton, which is 100 times the yield. Skimming over the document, she reads aloud, AO humans. Incinerated, blast, thermal, and radiation injuries. Beta burns to the skin. Lethal radiation doses, 20 miles, from ground zero. Even with medical care, not expected to survive. Blast and electromagnetic pulse, will damage communications infrastructure. Stalling of vehicles, infrastructure, completely destroyed, communications equipment, cell towers, etc., destroyed, computer equipment, destroyed, control systems, destroyed, water and electrical system, s, destroyed, few, if any, buildings, structurally sound. Rubble in streets, rubble, 30 feet deep. Blast injuries, overshadowed by injuries, from, collapsing structures. Blast injuries, from flying debris and glass. Unstable structures, sharp metal objects, ruptured gas lines. Hazmat teams, thwarted, by, stalled and crashed automobiles. Downed utility lines, overturned automobiles. Completely blocked streets, raging firestorm s, beyond the abilities of firefighters to control, hazardous chemicals, medical triage, contamination from fallout, widespread, death. A and then the journalist comes upon a line so jarring, it causes her to stop reading and to shake her head in disbelief. She takes a breath and reads on, AO after a nuclear detonation. Priorities are likely to change. Her cell phone pings. FEMA has issued another wireless emergency alert. She reads aloud, US under nuclear attack. Seek shelter below ground. Evacuation may be necessary to avoid fire risks. Turning back to the camera, she starts to say something, but then stops. She loses her composure on screen. Journalist, what in hell? She asks aloud. To no one in particular and everyone all at once, are we supposed to stay where we are? Or evacuate? She holds her smartphone up to the camera and points. Journalist, these two sets of instructions from FEMA contradict one another. She stops speaking. What is that to say? 40 minutes, 30 seconds, Los Ozos, California. In the California beach community of Los Ozos, a little over 6 miles north of Diablo Canyon, residents are in a state of absolute terror. The tall, rugged peaks between the nuclear power station and the town shielded many local residents from getting third-degree burns or carbonizing limbs. It protected them from getting impaled by flying objects, or being crushed to death under buildings mowed down by blast wave. But geography can't attempt to spare anyone in the area from an excruciating death by radiation that is inevitable, and will soon follow. If the radiation spewing out of the exposed reactor cores at the power plant does not attempt to kill them soon, the fallout from a mushroom cloud seeded with shattered spent fuel rods surely will. Pocket dosimeters and ion chamber electroscopes carried by some area residents, to monitor accumulated radiation doses in emergency situations, have maxed out. These field-readable dosimeters are designed to aid in tactical decisions after an unforeseen radiological release. Residents of Los Ozos who are prepared enough to be in possession of one of these dosimeters collectively realize the dire situation at hand. If they don't attempt to leave the area immediately, they will die. The power is out. Television and FM radio not available anywhere in the area. Even the NOAA Weather Radio All Hazards Nationwide Network, a long considered a stalwart news source in a disaster, has collapsed from overload, with an eerie unknown warning, unknown statement to error code broadcasting in a loop. Boats at sea tune into Channel 16, the VHF frequency for communication with other boats and the U.S. Coast Guard, but hear only indiscernible sounds. The nuclear reactor oversight telephone line is down. Pacific Gas and Electric, which runs the power plant, has a troubling safety history that includes a $13.5 billion settlement of claims linked to California fires. The tragic irony here is that this catastrophe is not their fault. Cell phones and computers that were plugged into wall sockets when the bomb exploded have had their microprocessors destroyed. The battery-powered emergency sirens are, for the most part, functioning as designed. Pole-mounted horns screech ear-piercing wails, an ominous, steady 3 to 5 minute long siren that sounds without interruption. A warning many residents know to mean, nuclear emergency. Beyond the local beach towns, some 500,000 people reside within 50 miles of Diablo Canyon. Word spreads rapidly among residents here that across the country, Washington, D.C., is also under nuclear attack. That what is happening is not a localized nuclear accident, but nuclear war. In coastal communities across San Luis Obispo County, cars back up out of driveways, windows up, noses and mouths covered with pieces of clothing or masks they had left over from COVID times. It is 12:43 p.m. local time. Every year TMS kids are still in school. Every second matters. The only way to stay alive is to evacuate. But which way to go? Fallout moves with wind. Beyond residents at TM driveways, a new horror presents itself in every town, at every turn, in every small and large community along the Central California coast. Cars. Cars everywhere. Separating the Diablo Canyon power plant from most towns is a 1,800-foot tall peak known as Mount Butchan. This hilly range of earth and stone buffered much of the bomber TMS localized electromagnetic pulse effects, sparing many cars from having their microprocessors fried. But the streetlights are out. Traffic is in a snarl. Residents in existential panic drive their cars over berms and across lawns in violent, desperate attempts at escape. Vehicles race down the wrong sides of the roads, smashing into other vehicles like bumper cars. It is bumper to bumper everywhere. 18 minutes have passed since the Diablo Canyon power plant was hit by a 300-kiloton nuclear bomb. A radioactive forest fire has set the surrounding mountains on fire, a mega inferno tearing its way down Mount Butchan on all sides, threatening people and entire towns. Radioactive ash fills the air. Marble-sized pieces of pulverized nuclear reactor concrete rain down from above. Dead seagulls fall from the sky, their wings on fire. People begin to lose control of their bowels, start vomiting blood. As the mushroom cloud rises, the sky goes dark. Every second matters. People get out of their cars and begin running. 40 minutes. 30 seconds, undisclosed location, 700 miles above the Pacific Ocean. High above the Pacific Ocean, 8 Trident missiles arc over the Earth, traveling at 13,600 miles per hour, or Mach 18. Their flight began just minutes ago, from an undisclosed point in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, somewhere north of the island of Tinian. Their targets are in Pyongyang. The total distance to target is 1,800 miles. With a range angle of 38.26 degrees, the total travel time from a launch to target is 14 minutes. Missile expert Ted Postol did the math. Guiding the Tridents on their high-speed transit through the atmosphere is an unusual form of navigation in the modern era. The U.S. Navy TMS most powerful, most expensive, most accurate nuclear-armed missiles get where they are going by an astro-navigation technique invented specifically for the Trident missile system, star sighting. Long before humans figured out how to write language down, how to record their own histories into stone and clay, people figured out how to get from point A to point B with the help of the heavens. Celestial navigation involves the practice of fixing an object at TMS position using the stars, the sun, and other celestial bodies. AO the submerged submarine has no ability to know exactly where it is at the time of launch. A Trident Missile Guidance Systems Manager Stephen J.D. Tullio explains. Air TMS a shipboard navigator, a human, to assist, AEB even that is not TMT precise enough. AVA Solvia to usher in armage donor D. Tullio says, is in the stars. AO the way that we handle, geolocation, uncertainty is by taking a star sighting during missile flight, to then effectively correct for the initial position error. A conceptually, this is the same system that has been used since the early days of the Cold War. The primitive technology prevents hacking. For this same reason, there is no remotely controlled kill switch on a ballistic missile. If there were, an enemy could ostensibly hack into a ballistic missile TMS guidance system and assume control of it. 8 Trident nuclear missiles, each with enough combined explosive power to turn Pyongyang into a fireplace, continue on course. On a suborbital trajectory, guided by the stars. 41 minutes, Central Command Center, Komsomolsk-on-Amur, Russia. Russia TMS Eastern counterpart to the Serpukhov 15 early warning radar facility is a central command center without a known Western reporting name. Located near Komsomolsk-on-Amur in the Russian Far East, the facility sits on the banks of the Amur River, along an unnamed road, in Khabarovsk Krai. This location is roughly 175 miles from the border with China, and 600 miles from the border with North Korea. The facility at TMS purpose is to interpret information from Tundra TMS constellation of early warning satellites in space. To see attacking nuclear missiles that are coming in from the United States by way of the Pacific Ocean to the south. Launched, as they would be, from a U.S. Ohio-class nuclear-powered, nuclear-armed submarine. Komsomolsk-on-Amur is a backwater city, isolated from the modern world. A regional center of metallurgy, aircraft manufacturing, and shipbuilding. It is also the former home to a notorious over-the-horizon radar transmitter facility called Duga 2, but more famously known as Woodpecker. The radar system was named, as such, for the mysterious and repetitive tapping noises transmitted over shortwave radio bands around the world for more than a decade during the Cold War. The steel and wired Duga structure was a massive half-mile long and 500-foot-tall monolith. NATO military intelligence monitored the site obsessively and gave it the reporting name Steel Yard. The Duga transmitter in Komsomolsk-on-Amur was dismantled in the 1990s after the Soviet Union was dissolved, but its more notorious counterpart still stands, in Ukraine, inside the Chernobyl exclusion zone. At 5:44 a.m. local time, the commander here at Komsomolsk-on-Amur is waiting for additional incoming information from Tundra space satellites. Across the Russian military, the Kazbek communications system has been activated. Every military facility in the country is on the highest alert status, on so-called preliminary command. Just seconds ago, Komsomolsk-on-Amur received word from its sister stations in Barnaul and in Irkutsk. AO the Russian Aerospace Force has 4 types of ground-based early warning radars potentially capable of detecting ballistic missile salvos, A. Dr. Thomas Withington tells us. An electronic warfare expert and military radar analyst with the Royal United Services Institute in England, Withington calculated how Russian track data in this scenario might come in. AO 3 minutes, and 9 seconds. After the Trident's launched, the 77 Yu-60M Voronezh DM radar system in Barnaul began tracking the submarine-launched ballistic missile salvo. 50 seconds later, the 77 Yu-6VP Voronezh DP in Irkutsk began tracking it, too. And now Komsomolsk-on-Amur gets alerted by the Tundra satellite system of an incoming missile attack from the Pacific. Early warning space satellites say see hundreds of objects coming at Russia or what the commander thinks is at Russia from the south. The same salvo seen by Russian ground radar stations in Barnaul and Irkutsk. The Tundra system says hundreds of objects at this point in time, not because Tundra is misperceiving sunlight or clouds for rocket exhaust. Rocket exhaust only happens in a ballistic missile ETMS boost phase. The Tridents are now in mid-course phase, where a new misperception by Russian early warning radar systems can occur. Trident missiles contain hundreds of objects inside every warhead bus. These objects are decoys, designed to fake out Russian interceptor missiles. These decoys are constructed from thin pieces of crossed wire, and shaped like Jax, the kids at EM Toys, Ted Postol explains, and, to a radar system like the one at Komsomolsk-on-Amur, these wires look like hundreds of additional warheads. The commander picks up the phone and notifies Moscow that his early warning system sees a massive barrage of warheads attacking Russia from the south. 41 minutes, 1 second. Inside the Doomsday plane, over North Dakota, USA. Inside the Airborne Command Center in the Doomsday plane, the STRATCOM commander opens the Black Book. With the third attacking ballistic missile on its way to the United States, additional nuclear counterstrikes against North Korea are under his review. The Secretary of Defense and the Vice Chairman are also on the call, on advanced extremely high-frequency satellite comms, from Site R. It has been 8 minutes since DISA lost contact with Marine One. No one knows where the president is. The Quick Reaction Force has located the football and is bringing it back to Raven Rock. The mill aide is dead. His parachute ripped apart by blast wave. The special agent in charge of the president at EMS detail, the CAT operators, and the president are all still missing, presumably separated from one another by wind drift. With the chairman of the Joint Chiefs dead, the vice chairman is now the highest ranking officer in the military, whose job it is to advise the president and the secretary of defense. As acting chairman, she outranks all other officers in the military, but she cannot command the military. That is the job of the president. Vice chairman, SecDef needs to be sworn in as acting president. Now, everyone on satellite comms agrees. But executive branch people at Site R are fighting over line of succession protocols from Article 2, Section 1, Clause 4 of the Constitution. At issue is the still unresolved, post-9/11 piece of congressional legislation about what to do after a EMS decapitation event. The president pro tempore of the Senate is, in this scenario, apparently still alive. DISA received a message from one of his staffers just a few minutes ago. The second highest ranking member of the Senate was homesick when the bomb detonated over the Pentagon, and now he at EMS on his way to Site Ra, driving himself from Maryland in his own car to assume his line of succession role as Commander-in-Chief. National Security Advisor, forget that. We invoke the bumping procedure and swear in SecDef. He cites Title 3, Section 19 of the Succession Act of 1947. People TMS choice. STRATCOM has a different focus. STRATCOM commander, we need to respond in force to incoming missile number 3. Vice chairman, SecDef needs to be sworn in as acting president, now. STRATCOM commander, we need to choose strike options. SecDef, we can't TMT do anything until we have the Russian president on the line. Everyone on the satellite call knows the STRATCOM commander is in possession of the Universal Unlock Code, meaning he has the ability and arguably the authority to launch additional nuclear counterstrikes. STRATCOM commander, the Russian president refusing your call is not good. SecDef, upset, he won't TMT take my call because he at EMM not the acting president of the United States. Vice chairman, we need to swear in SecDef. SecDef, EATMM blind. As rapid-fire discussions ensue, and as decisions are being made about what looks strong and what looks weak, so are they being made in Russia in a nuclear bunker underground. 42 minutes, boys, Maryland, no one has heard from the president because when the nuclear bomb hit the Pentagon, Marine One experienced a system failure from localized electromagnetic pulse and crashed into the ground. As we know, seconds before the crash, a member of the Secret Service CAT element tandem jumped the president out the open door of the Sikorsky, in an attempt to save his life. The two men landed violently in a forested area in Boyd's, Maryland, near Little Seneca Lake. The CAT operator had his neck broken. The president was cushioned by the CAT operator, a TMS body, and kept alive by a stroke of luck. Now the president unclips himself from the dead man, a TMS body, and wriggles free. The TMS a deep gash on his forehead. His left arm and right leg have compound fractures. He can see the bloody, torn tendons and the grey-white exposed bone pushing through his skin. There is blood. Lots of blood. The president lies here in this wooded area, listening to the trees sway in the early spring wind. He is terrified that he will die. He is helpless. He can't attempt to walk or even crawl out of here, not with the damage to his arm and leg. He is losing blood fast. He feels faint. He is the commander-in-chief and America is at nuclear war. Will anyone find him? The president at TMS iPhone got lost in the mayhem. He tries using the dead CAT operator at TMS radio, but it doesn't TMT work. He is unsure where he physically is. The TMS a quick reaction force looking for him. He surmises. But without any communication devices working, how will they find him before he bleeds out? 42 minutes, Ground Zero, the National Zoo, in the rings around Ground Zero in Washington, D.C. The horrific pain and suffering is not limited to humans. At the National Zoo, 4 miles north of the Pentagon, a majority of the animals are dead, but some are still alive, blinded, with third-degree burns, and in a complete state of shock. Asian elephants, Western lowland gorillas, and Sumatran tigers writhe and bellow in their cages and their pens. Most have charred skin hanging off their bodies, their hair on fire. Animals instinctively go to water when on fire, in a futile attempt to put out the flames. This includes humans, whose bodies now fill the waterways all across the city. The Potomac is clogged with untold numbers of dead, similar to what happened in Nagasaki, Japan, in August 1945. Thousands of bodies bopped up and down in the river, bloated and purplish from soaking up the water, ice survivor Shigeko Matsumoto later recalled. Here in the waterways around D.C., large metallic-colored blowflies, carrion insects, land on the floating dead bodies and begin laying eggs. The animals in their cages will all, almost certainly, die. There is no one left to feed them, or to free them or to let them try and survive on their own. Any human survivors near the National Zoo face insurmountable hurdles. Burned and bleeding, their lungs fill with toxic gases and smoke. They are desperately trying to leave the disaster area before the ensuing megafire burns them alive. But massive piles of rubble make the terrain near impossible to traverse. Unsound buildings collapse all around. Lethal radiation in the air silently sentences survivors to death. History lesson number 8, radiation sickness. Defense scientists have known what acute radiation sickness does to the body since the Manhattan Project years. Consider the May 1946 accident at Omega Site, at a secret laboratory hidden in the Los Alamos woods, the details of which remained classified for decades. It was a cool spring day, 3 miles from the main lab, when a group of scientists stood hovering over a table, concentrating. The men were working on a plutonium bomb core, the first atomic test since Hiroshima and Nagasaki were destroyed. The US nuclear stockpile at the time was around 4. The future of the nuclear arms race depended on this moment. The Los Alamos scientists, upon whom many jobs and fortunes depended, were under great pressure to get this plutonium core experiment correct. The physicist handling the plutonium that day was a man named Louis Slitin. There were 7 other scientists in the room. Slitin had recently decided to leave the Manhattan Project for moral reasons, he told friends. The war was over and he was done working on atomic bombs. Los Alamos officials said fine, but required Slitin to train someone to take his place. That someone was a scientist named Alvin C. Graves. During this dangerous experiment, or dangerous enough to be known as Aedicling the Dragoner, TMS Tailway Slitin dropped one of the nuclear spheres he was handling, causing the material to go critical. Knowing the risk to himself, but hoping to save the others in the room, Slitton thrust himself in front of Alvin Graves, who was standing beside him. Eyewitnesses described a quick flash of blue light to a blue glow, others said and a wave of intense heat. People began screaming. The security guard assigned to protect the nuclear material fled the room, raced outside, and ran up into the New Mexico hills. Someone called for an ambulance to come quick. The laboratory was evacuated, but Louis Slitton stayed behind to begin sketching out a diagram where he and everyone else had been standing, for future study and use. So defense scientists could understand how radiation poisoning works. How it kills. Slitton at EMS sketch was remarkably detailed for a man whose death by acute radiation syndrome had already begun. Years later, the laboratory made a mock-up of where Louis Slitton was when the accident happened. He was just 35 years old. Louis Slitton at EMS Los Alamos badge, left, and a laboratory mock-up of the experiment that killed him, right, at Los Alamos in 1946. Los Alamos National Laboratory, in the ambulance, Slitton vomited. His left hand, the one closest to the nuclear material when the accident happened, went numb. His groin began swelling. He had explosive diarrhea and vomited again, and again. At the Los Alamos Hospital, more vomiting. More watery diarrhea releasing from his bowels. Prostrate and weak, watery fluid began collecting in his hands, which expanded like balloons. Horrible and painful blisters formed under his skin, then burst. Doctors dressed the pustules on Slitton at EMS hands with Vaseline and gauze. They tried debridement, scrubbing the skin with a wire sponge, to remove damaged tissue. They plunged Slitton at EMS extremities in ice, pumped his body with fresh blood. The days wore on. More ice baths. More blood transfusions. But nothing could alleviate the intense pain. A lethal dose of high-energy X-rays, gamma rays, and neutrons had penetrated Louis Slitton at EMS organs. His body was now failing to oxygenate its own blood. Cyanosis set in, bluish discoloration that spread across his chest, arms, groin, and legs. The purple patches covering his body split open and hemorrhaged blood. The same thing happened to the open sores in his mouth. With thick pieces of skin now peeling off Slitton at EMS hands, doctors considered amputation, but administered blood transfusions instead of one after the next, after the next. As the end drew near, Louis Slitton was experiencing necrosis. Death of the limbs. All the bone marrow stem cells throughout his body were now dying or dead. He was experiencing necrosis of the blood vessel walls, jaundice, acute thrombosis in the small and large blood vessels, severe epithelial damage in the intestines. As his body began losing its ability to form antibodies, the cell lining in Slitton at EMS gastrointestinal tract began giving off products that began moving into neighboring tissues. Louis Slitton at EMS body was being invaded by bacteria in his own intestines. His adrenal glands were malfunctioning. Acute sepsis was setting in. He began experiencing extensive gangrene due to interruption in his blood supply. Then organ system damage, tissue death, circulatory collapse, liver failure, finally, complete organ failure. On day 9, Louis Slitton died from acute radiation poisoning. Not long after Slitton took his last breath, Los Alamos doctors began slicing him open, eager to learn how radiation kills a human. Before 1945, the science of radiation poisoning did not exist. Now, in the spring of 1946, the very concept was less than 1 year old. With the first cut of the scalpel, doctors came upon a horror not observed in a world before the invention of the atomic bomb. The mess inside Slitton at EMS dead body was like a sea of rotten soup. His air blood was uncoagulable at autopsy, one of the doctors wrote in a classified post-mortem report. The radiation poisoning had caused the near-complete loss of tissue that once separated one of Slitton at EMS organs from the next. Without this lining, his organs had merged into one. And to think, just a few months prior, Manhattan Project Chief General Leslie Groves had assured the public and Congress that death by radiation poisoning was a very pleasant way to die. A 43 minutes after launch, underground bunker, Siberia, Russia. The president of the Russian Federation is in an undisclosed location in Siberia, in a nuclear command and control facility hidden away from the rest of the world. The location could be beneath Mount Yamantor, in the Urals, or Mount Kosvinsky, near Sverdlovsk, or in the Altai Republic, near a snake turn in the Katun River.